It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have you seen any of the billboards in some cities in Iowa with this message? Godless? So are we. This is a message that comes courtesy of local affiliates for the United Coalition of Reason. It's a nonprofit based in Washington that acts as an umbrella group for organizations representing atheists and agnostics across the United States. This hour, we want to talk about the growth of secular America, the fact that the number of non-religious Americans has risen dramatically. For instance, back in the 1950s, fewer than 5% of Americans said they were non-religious. Today, it's something like 25 or 30%. So what leads some people to lead lives without a belief in God? You can join our conversation this hour. In fact, there's quite a conversation going on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Do you live your life without a belief in God? How did you come to your non-religious convictions? And if you're someone with a religious faith, this is your chance. What one question would you like to ask of someone without religious beliefs? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook. And you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us, first of all, Rory Moe, coordinator of the Central and Eastern Iowa Coalition of Reason, the organization I mentioned just a moment ago. Rory is in our Des Moines studio. Hello, Rory.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing fine. So tell us, what's behind these billboards? What's your goal?
Our goal is simply to raise awareness, bring in new members to the member groups under the umbrella of the Central and Eastern Coalitions of Reason in Iowa. Many of these groups were not aware that each other existed, so we also want to foster communication between the groups, share ideas and resources, and really to educate the public as to who we are and who we are not.
Mm-hmm. Bring in new members. That sounds like you're converting people. Are you looking for...
Absolutely not. The billboards are reaching out to that demographic that are already non-theist who were unaware that groups existed.
Mm, okay. So tell me, in your own words, who are you?
I've been pretty much a lifelong atheist. I've been active with the American Atheist for many years. A couple years ago, I joined the Iowa Atheists and Freethinkers here in Des Moines. We have about 760 members. And a little over a year ago, August of 2013, I discovered that South Dakota had run a billboard campaign. Their message was, don't believe in God, join the club. Mm-hmm. And it piqued my interest as to who was behind this. So I discovered it was the United Coalition of Reason, and I spoke with Fred Edwards, who is the executive director of that organization, and he advised me to seek out as many non-theist groups as I could in the state of Iowa. And it turned out there were many more than I anticipated.
Mm-hmm. So give us an idea. How many are there?
We have 13 in the Central and Eastern Iowa Coalitions of Reason. And I did a rough count. Not all groups list their membership totals, but I had over 1,800 members and certainly many more that are Facebook members who like the particular pages.
Mm-hmm. So what happens at your group meetings?
We talk about anything.
You don't talk about the lack of a deity.
Sometimes we do, but really we talk, it's camaraderie. It's really a place of a safe haven where we're not judged and we can talk about anything we want without fear of any judgment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Rory Moe is with us, coordinator of the Central and Eastern Iowa Coalition of Reason. Also joining us by phone this hour, Phil Zuckerman, professor of sociology and secular studies. Secular studies, actually, he founded that at Pitzer College in Claremont, California, the author of Faith No More and Society Without God. His latest book, Living the Secular Life, New Answers to Old Questions. Phil Zuckerman, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
So you are an atheist, agnostic?
All of the above, sure, yeah.
Okay, but you grew up in the Jewish tradition.
I grew up culturally Jewish. You know, I'm like most American Jews where my Judaism was more of an ethnic or cultural thing involving holidays and rituals and community, but no faith. So I've never believed in God. My parents don't believe in God. In fact, all four of my grandparents are non-believers. So I'm a third generation non-believer.
Mm-hmm. So let's have you, in your words, define secularism, what we're talking about this hour.
Yeah, that's a good one. I would say there's different branches of secularism, two main branches. One we might just call political secularism, and that's just sort of Jeffersonian wall of separation, trying to keep church and state separate. That type of secularism is the idea that, you know, religion and government should be kept far apart, and government should be as aggressively neutral as possible when it comes to the public sphere concerning matters of religion and religious faith. And that secularism, I think, is something that both believers and non-believers can rally mm-hmm. behind. In fact, I mean, when Jefferson coined that term, separation of state, he was writing to the Danbury Baptists, who were very much in favor of such an idea. But there's another kind of secularism, I think, which is perhaps more ideological or cultural or personal. I can't quite find the right word, but it has to do with critiquing religion, walking away from religion, disabusing people of their religious beliefs, trying to live life without reference to the supernatural, living life without identifying with their religion or participating in religious communities or holding personal faith in God or gods or deities or nether realms or whatnot. And so you have both of these types of secularism.
I mentioned at the outset that we've had a dramatic change. In fact, surveys showing non-religious Americans from 5% to 25%, maybe 30%. But what's behind those numbers?
You know, we've got our work cut out for us as sociologists on that front, but it has been a dramatic increase. In fact, non-religiosity is the only quote-unquote religious identification growing in all 50 states. It's been quite an explosion. So there's kind of the main contenders are, I would say, if I could just quickly list them, is for which we have some data, is number one, it seems to be a reaction by many Americans to the growth and success of the religious right. So a lot of moderately religious but moderate political or liberal political folks have seen the Ann Coulters and the Sean Hannitys and the Mike Huckabees and the Pat Robertsons and thought, you know what, if that's – or the George Bush Jr.'s, you know, if that's what it means to be Christian and it means all these conservative politics and worldviews, well, I don't want anything to do with that. So there's been kind of a wanting to distance oneself from the religious right, and that includes just saying, well, I guess I'm not religious then. So that's been key. We've also have some data in terms of a backlash against the Catholic pedophile priest scandal. A lot of people became ex-Catholics in the wake of the revelations of the depth of the crimes and the cover-ups and the handling of that problem. And then you've also got, interestingly enough, some things that don't seem to be related to religion directly but are having an effect, and that's the rise and increase of women working outside the home. We know from international studies and national studies that when more and more women work outside the home, religion tends to suffer. Women tend to be the ones that keep religion afloat in the home. You know, they're the ones, you know, let's say prayers at dinner time. Let's say prayers at bedtime. Hey, let's get to church. You know, it's the Marge Simpson dragging Homer and the kids to church. And yet when women are out working, either because of demands on their time or they have more agency in their life, we don't know, but there seems to be a decrease in religiosity. And we're seeing that trend very much here. We also can talk about the rise of the internet in terms of helping secular folks find each other, learn about atheism, agnosticism, learn about criticisms of religion that they may not have come across, and certainly find community. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the big contenders, factors.
Mm-hmm. Phil, let me chip in this email from Nate, a listener in Des Moines. He on this point, he says, I wonder if more people being non-religious could be part of more people being generally accepting of other religions or atheism, since there isn't an expectation for someone to be a certain religion, people who once would have called themselves Christian, for example, would feel comfortable admitting that they never really were religious. They just called themselves that. Is there, because I assume these surveys that reveal this are you self-identify one way or another. There's no sort of litmus test on this.
I think that's a very valid and fine point in that email. I think religious pluralism does allow for greater acceptance of actually opting out and saying, well, I'm none of the above. It's much easier to do when there's a greater diversity of worldviews and religious identities and so on and so forth. Absolutely.
Okay, let's go to our first caller. Charles is with us from Fort Dodge as we describe and talk about what's behind the growth of secularism in our nation. Charles, hello.
Yes, hello. I don't really have, it's like a weird, not comment, it's a question, but my life as it was is like I was, you could call myself, under the existence of the what people see as Christianity, and then I got kind of mad at that, and then I found myself going agnostic, and then from there I kind of went back to teachings of Christianity, but with more depth in understanding. But my biggest thing that I found is that in Christianity specific, when they talk about Jesus Christ, there is not a differentiation between they combine Lord and Savior with Jesus Christ, when to me, as I see it, I see like the creator of the earth, that is the Lord, and Jesus Christ as the Savior, and people try to make the physical person more than what he was, and he was just an example of the teachings and so forth, and mm-hmm. That's where I see a lot of people get messed up.
Charles, thank you for that observation from Fort Dodge. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, a nice conversation, I said, going on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Why don't you see that? We'll try to read a number of those. Here's one from our Facebook page for Rory and Phil to perhaps react to. Also, along the lines of what Charles was talking about, religion, this is from Jim, religion is a man-made political capitalistic system. So, no, I do not believe in religion. I do believe in spirituality. I believe in the duality of spirit, evil and righteous. I believe that our hearts contain our spirit, soul, and our minds give us the free will to choose. What little I know about Native Americans, I believe their views on spirituality is pretty right. I'm a Christian that believes in the teachings of Jesus. He tried to teach us the evils of the capitalist political religious system and was tortured and murdered for being one to teach us those truths about the ruling class, which still control the world today. From Jim on our Facebook page. Reaction to that, Phil?
Hey, sounds good, man. I'm all for critiquing hypocrisy and the negative aspects of aggressive global capitalism and the exploitation of the poor by the rich. So, you know, hey, man, I mean, I'm not a believer in Jesus's supernatural identity. I'm not even sure that most of those stories are verifiable or valid. But as for the heart of the teachings, I find many of them wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about one of the major parts of your book. You talk about morals, and it's often thought that morals are derived from religious faith. So many people of faith wonder how non-religious people have a set of morals or where they come from.
Yeah, it's a common question. And, you know, basically the quick answer is, you know, if you're getting your morals from a magical invisible God, you're in a sense guilty of moral outsourcing. You're sort of abdicating the responsibility of being your own moral guide and just looking obediently to somebody that's invisible to tell you how to live. And that's a framework that most secular people reject. So where do we get our morals if not from a sort of magical invisible deity? We get our morals from the following. Number one, the kind of brains we have evolved. We've always been pack animals, and we can look at how our capacities for empathy and sympathy and understanding others is primary. Without those brain neurological capacities, we couldn't be moral, but we have brains that allow us to feel empathy for others. Number two, we get our morals from the people that raise us, and not what they teach us, but how they live. You know, we learn far more from observing others and interacting with others than just being told X, Y, or Z. We also get our morals from the culture within which we dwell. We internalize so many of the values and beliefs and morals from our culture around us. But beyond that, we get our morals from lived experience. We see what it's like to be lied to. We watch what happens when we lie to others. We see what it's like to have something stolen. We feel and experience what happens when we engage in deceit or violence. So it's an ongoing, complex aspect of our lives. Now, the problem, though, is, you know, you ask a religious person, where do you get your morals? And they have a quick answer. You know, I get it from the Bible, or I get it from the Quran, or I get it from God. When you talk to secular people, it's not so easy to say, well, I get it. You know, I have this little list here of my morals. It's far more complex, involving the kind of brains we have, the culture within which we live, the people that raise us, and the experiences we have over a lifetime that that all serve to help us with our moral compasses.
Phil Zuckerman is with us, professor of sociology and secular studies at Pitzer College in Claremont, California, author of his latest book, Living the Secular Life, New Answers to Old Questions. And want to throw in here that Phil Zuckerman here has spent 10 years interviewing people from all over the world, all walks of life, and combined these excerpts from these interviews in his book, along with the statistical data, to give us an impression of non-religious America. Rory Moe is with us, coordinator of the Central and Eastern Iowa Coalition of Reason. Our phone lines are busting at the seams. Let's go to our phones and hear a few people here. Joy is with us. I see on my screen, Joy, in Pocahontas. You are a Lutheran pastor?
Yes, I am. I think this is a great conversation because I sort of think can you hear me okay?
Yes, absolutely. You're on.
Okay. The kind of the rise of the nons, as we call them sometimes, the non-affiliated, has to do with the rise of pastors that can be ordained without any education at all, which leads to an understanding that perhaps Christians are stupid. and I totally get that with creationism and using the Bible as a book of science, which it's not, and using it as a weapon against other people. And so, you know, as a Lutheran, we follow a university professor, for one thing. We follow a rabbi who asked more questions than he answered. And so with the popularity of movies like God's Not Dead, which pits education against faith, if I didn't know better, I would also think to myself, well, that's a stupid way to go. So,
As a Lutheran pastor, I have to ask you, because you can see on our Facebook page, for example, and it's not uncommon for even discussions of non-religion to get people a little bit defensive. Do you see it as a threat in any way?
No, actually not, because as I teach in my congregation, my faith motivates how I live. My job is not to convert, but to love and to serve. And I did something in Pocahontas here called a heretic door, where I put a door out in the community and asked people to nail stuff to the door, as Martin Luther would have done, questions to the church. And a lot of the questions that I got there had to do with harm the church has done to somebody, or an understanding the church isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing by caring for the poor. So I loved to ask those questions. Okay. I love to engage in the conversation and use written word as a tool to understand more. Yeah, I think the other problem is that people elevate the Bible to a deity, and it is not, and that's idolatry in my eyes.
Joy, we have so many others. You're saying so many interesting things. We have a lot of other people. I'm going to let them into the circle as well. Joy, a Lutheran pastor calling from Pocahontas. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And let's go to Tom in Waukee. Hi, Tom. You've been listening. What do you want to chip in?
Yeah, I would just like to thank Rory Moe for going on the show today and the Coalition of Reason for putting up the billboards. There are a lot of people in Iowa who had no idea that there were groups that they could join and reach out to for support. And I would like to see more of this type of thing happening. We need to break down some of the walls and boundaries and realize that we're all humans and we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. Tom, did you respond to those billboards by getting in touch? Or?
Yes, actually I did. And yesterday I went to an atheist-sponsored activism meeting out in Omaha, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. So Rory Moe, there's someone who has seen a billboard and come to join a group. So how many of these people in this latest round of billboards have are like Tom in Waukee?
Oh, very many. The Quad Cities was probably the had the biggest impact because the billboards in Davenport and Moline was the first presence of any billboards of this type. The secular humanists of the greater Quad Cities area, now this was about 2 weeks ago, had told me they had gained 40 new members, and so many of those folks said they did not know any group existed. And also, on the eastern side of the state, there are at least three new groups that have essentially surfaced and now would like to learn more about the coalition and eventually join.
Mm-hmm. From our Facebook page, we're asking, if you live your life without a belief in God, how do you come to these religious, non-religious convictions? Also, if you're someone with a religious faith, you have a chance now to ask a question that you would like to ask of someone without religious beliefs. For instance, Terry on our Facebook page takes us up on the offer and says, my question as someone with a religious faith is, when you are experiencing really difficult times in your life, what gives you hope? Phil Zuckerman.
I think that's a really important and profound question, and my response to be, you know what, if you're experiencing difficulties in your life, whether it be illness or loss of a loved one or family trauma or whatever, whatever gives you hope in those times, I'm all for. So if it's believing in God, if it's believing in anything to help you get through those tough times, then that's fine by me in my book. But what I have found in studying secular people and secular culture is, for many of them, it's not a choice. They can't suddenly say, oh, I'm experiencing a trauma, I think I'll believe in God. They just don't believe. They're unable to believe. They can't believe for various intellectual reasons, cognitive reasons, maybe even personality reasons. So what do? They get through these tough times by, number one, turning to family and friends. They get through those tough times by, number two, turning to themselves and self-reliance and finding inner strength. I've interviewed atheists who survived the Holocaust. I've interviewed atheists who survived drunk driving accidents have been paralyzed from the neck down. I've interviewed people who have endured the death of children, and it's basically the same story. It's hard. You get through it the best you can. If you turn to faith, hey, that's understandable. But more and more Americans and people all over the world are somehow not finding faith an answer anymore, and they're turning to friends, family, and themselves to weather these tough times.
Okay, we want to continue our conversation with Phil Zuckerman and Rory Moe. Phil is the author of the new book, Living the Secular Life, New Answers to Old Questions. Also, when we come back, we want to tackle this question that you can find all over in many media sources in the United States, that this secular trend means, well, our society is going to collapse into some kind of depravity. And Phil will talk about that. We'll ask him to when we come back. He's done a research on that. And in fact, how agnostics and atheists feel about different news issues, political issues, when we come back. Do you live your life without a belief in God? How did you come to your non-religious convictions? Or if you're someone with a religious faith, what one question would you like to ask of someone without religious beliefs? 1-866-780-9100. Go to our Facebook page. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about the growth of secularism in this country, meaning not the separation of church and state. This is a term using people who don't have a belief in God as a part of their life. We're trying to explore what's behind this trend. In the 1950s, fewer than 5% of Americans identified themselves as non-religious. Today, something like 25%. So we're looking at the implications for individuals, families, for our society. Phil Zuckerman is with us, professor of sociology and secular studies at Pitzer College in Claremont, California. His latest book, Living the Secular Life, New Answers to Old Questions. Rory Moe is with us in our Des Moines studio, coordinator of the Central and Eastern Iowa Coalition of Reason. They've been putting up billboards of late in the last few months, declaring godless, so are we, in an effort to make those who don't have religious beliefs know that they are part of a larger group and they can have gatherings as well. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at Iowa Public Radio. iowapublicradio.org. Really a fun to see the conversation going on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. I see a lot of different views there. We won't get to all of them read on the air, but please do check out that. Or tweet us at IPR Talk. Phil, I wanted to before we get back to calls, I wanted to talk about this at a society level, which you do in your book as well. When we move to from the individual to the societal level, a few of the questions that you ask in your book are, how are highly secularized societies faring? Does the existence of more and more secular people in a society and increasing secularization pose a menacing threat to that social order?
Yeah, you know, I think just to give you some backup there, background, I mean, I think a lot of Americans, especially older Americans, remember the Soviet Union. And we know that the Soviet Union was explicitly atheistic, and it was hell-bent on destroying religion. And it was not a pretty picture. It was not a good society. It was not a healthy society. A lot of atheist regimes have been pernicious, from Pol Pot to Stalin to, Albania, the first officially declared atheist country in the world, where you had these kind of communist regimes that were non-democratic and very repressive. That's one kind of state-imposed secularism that I certainly do not support. But when we look at a more organic form of secularism, and by that I mean people not being forced to abandon religion by some dictator, but open democratic societies where people are simply choosing in their own lives to live without religion. They're losing their faith, they're not interested in congregating, and they are just their faith is simply withering in a kind of natural, organic way. Those societies, interestingly enough, are among those societies where that is in abundance. So the societies where we have the highest rates of what we're calling organic secularity, with the most people not being religious anymore, are actually doing quite well. They're among the healthiest, safest, and humane countries in the world. Now, I'm not saying that's because people are becoming secular, but this growing secularism doesn't seem to be a problem. It's not the threat that a lot of conservative or religious Americans imagine it to be. The center holds, things don't fall apart. In fact, the most highly secularized countries today tend to have the lowest murder rates, the lowest violent crime rates. They take care of their elderly. They take care of their babies, great women's rights, great health care systems. So what we're finding, and that even holds within the United States, you can compare the most God-believing states with the least God-believing states, and the correlations, granted they are just correlations, but the correlations still hold. The most God-believing states have the highest crime rates, have the highest poverty rates, domestic violence abuse rates, alcoholism rates, etc., and the least theistic states in America are faring quite well at that societal level.
Mm-hmm. Give us some names for the – are you talking about, I assume, sort of Western Europe, Scandinavia?
Yeah, the least theistic or the least God-believing and the least religious countries today include the Scandinavian nations, Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, and Finland. You've also got Japan there. You've also got South Korea. You've got Estonia, the Czech Republic, Germany, Netherlands, France. These tend to have the highest rates. Scotland, much of Great Britain. These tend to have the highest rates of secularity, organic secularity in the world today. But you've also got Israel is quite secular. Azerbaijan, of all places, Uruguay. So it is all over the world you can find such nations, but they do tend to be concentrated in parts of Asia and parts of Northern Europe.
Talking about the growth of secularism in the world and in the United States, Phil Zuckerman, author of Living the Secular Life with us, New Answers to Old Questions. Rory Moe in our Des Moines studio, coordinator of the Central and Eastern Iowa Coalition of Reason. So much on our Facebook page and on our phone lines. I want to get to as many as possible. Here's an interesting question or comment from our Facebook page from Sarah. What disturbs me about the atheist movement is that so much of it is about this traumatized fleeing from religion and fighting against religion. I understand that these people are in some kind of a battle and that there really are religious nuts who will attack them for publicly breaking with religion. But it makes it difficult to just say, yeah, God, not really a thing for me. Rory, can you understand that? Do you run into people who understand your movement as a battle against religion?
Well, I have seen some of the comments from newspaper articles that talked about the billboards. Most comments are overwhelmingly supportive, but you will find those that see them as an attack, and they certainly are not. When I met with the leaders of each of the groups, we carefully considered the wording for the billboard, and we came across godless as being simply generic, so we're not attacking any particular religion at all.
You don't think godless is pejorative in the way it's used?
No.
No? Okay.
Absolutely generic.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the demographic we're trying to reach are those non-theists who may not be aware of the groups. And just to raise public awareness that we are a large minority out there and growing, as Phil has mentioned.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you thought a lot about the wording on the billboards that appeared in Iowa.
Yes.
Godless, so are we. Now, here's another billboard in other parts of the country. I don't think this has to do with your group, and I want to have listen to a little clip of audio here, too. These are advertising billboards in other parts of the country showing a young girl writing a letter to Santa.
Yes.
And then the words, "Dear Santa, all I want for Christmas is to skip church. I'm too old for fairy tales." This is clearly meant to be provocative.
Yes, lore. That was by the American Atheists, and they tend to be more provocative in their billboards.
Let's listen to what Bill O'Reilly of Fox News had to say. The O'Reilly Factor, the number one program in cable news. Fox News, the top cable channel. Let's listen to, of course, Bill O'Reilly, known for his comments about the war on Christmas. Here's a little excerpt.
Every Christmas season, there are people who try to diminish the celebration of Jesus' birthday. We all know it. But we do have a whole bunch of war on Christmas deniers who say that I and others are making the whole thing up. Well, here's the first evidence this year. A billboard put up by an atheist group telling children to skip church on Christmas Day. Nice, right? Billboards are run in a number of states.
Okay, Bill O'Reilly there. So Phil Zuckerman, this pushback against this movement, is a pushback against the entire movement? Or you describe in your book you have passive secularists and more active ones, more confrontational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think as with anything, I mean, I'm sure religious people must feel frustrated all the time when the kind of more aggressive wings of their own movements get more press, more publicity. You know, I think if your average Christian who's just trying to love and do good in the world and be charitable is probably often frustrated when what gets focused on is the kind of more aggressive, hot-headed folks who are out there judging others or whatnot. And I think you find the same thing in the secular movement, too. There are aggressive atheists who want to deride and mock religion, who seem to find strength or power in making fun of other people's religiosity, but they are a minority. My research, I have found the vast majority of non-religious men and women are just living their lives without religion. They're not angry at religion. They don't hate it. They don't blame others for being religious. It just doesn't have any personal meaning or significance to them. And they're living their lives, loving their families, working in their jobs, doing whatever good they can. So I just think that has to be acknowledged, and it hasn't been acknowledged to the degree it should be as of yet, but hopefully that will be changing as the numbers keep rising.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, too, you point out in your book how there's a number of polls that indicate how we as a society feel about atheists. Share those with us. There was one, I think, I read in your book about the respondents had to rank types of people in order of whether they would receive medical care, I think a kidney in this case.
That's correct. We've got a whole slew of social science from the last 15 years showing that atheists tend to be among the least liked, most hated minority groups in America. That particular study asked people to hypothetically, decide who should get of all these people in need of a kidney, how would you rank them? And atheists, they were given different demographic profiles, and people were more likely to give a kidney to a religious person, for example, than an atheist. There's been national Pew surveys where people are asked, would you vote for a president, a qualified individual, if they happen to be, and then you get all these differences, a woman, an African-American, a Mormon, a Catholic, a Muslim, a homosexual, a Latino or Hispanic, et cetera, et cetera. Atheist always comes in last place. People are more willing, they say, to vote for a homosexual or a Muslim than an atheist. Pew recently came out with a national survey asking people, how would you feel if your son or daughter were to marry someone from the following group. And again, a Jew, a Mormon, a Black, a Asian American, all the minorities, and atheist again comes in last place where people would be most unhappy. There's been psychological studies where people are just individuals who commit violent or aggressive or hostile acts are described, and then for some reason people are more likely to assume that they're atheists, which is in absolute contradiction to the reality. Atheists are actually grossly underrepresented in our nation's criminal justice system. We are far less likely to be committing crimes and getting punished for those crimes than the religious in terms of corresponding to our numbers. But so, yes, there's a stigma around atheism. There's a stigma around atheists. People assume if you don't believe in God, you don't have any morals. And we've got a lot of research to back this up. But, yeah, the surveys are out there. I hope. You know.
You point out in your book as well that when it comes, though, to generosity and volunteering, charitable giving, for instance, that religious people do better.
Absolutely. I think it's important for the secular community to acknowledge areas where we don't do as well. It's not like, you know, we may do quite well in certain ways and not others. And when it comes to generosity and charity, the religious do better. That said, however, a lot of research, particularly from Robert Putnam, has found that it's not belief in God that makes people more charitable or generous. It's being part of a moral or religious community. And they find this by, you know, when you take people who do believe in God but don't belong to religious groups, they do not have the same levels of generosity or charity. In fact, they're lower. Conversely, when you find non-believers who, for whatever reason, are part of churches, you know, maybe because of their spouse, they do contribute to charity and are just as generous as others. So it actually seems to be that the group effect, when you're regularly congregating with others and there's consistent opportunities for good works and good deeds, you know, we need people at a homeless shelter, we need help with food baskets, et cetera, et cetera. Well, when those opportunities are consistently presented and you're in a group of people that value these things, surprise, surprise, you're more likely to do that. But, you know, what we are seeing is those secular people out there that are joining things like Sunday Assembly, these kind of humanistic groups, they are contributing and donating time and money to the same degree because they're it's the same situation. So I think there's something about the associational aspect of religiosity that seems to enhance and increase our generosity and not so much the specific theism involved.
Phil Zuckerman is with us, Living the Secular Life, his latest book. Let's go to the phones. We don't have much time left, so many callers. I'll ask you to cut right to the chase, Rich in Winterset. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air. What did you want to share in this discussion?
Well, I joined the American Free Thinkers and Atheists out of Des Moines shortly after they did their bus signage. And I've always been an atheist, but I've always been in the closet until I found that group. And it was about the time that the religion was coming up real strong around small towns. And ever since I've come out and been more militant about it, not to the extent that militant, but where I take people on about these beliefs. And I find that I've cooled a lot of the talk and the rhetoric down. I contacted Parkinson's in 2009, and I've been doing work trying to get petitions out to release embryonic stem cell. Mm-hmm. And of course the religious community has a real hard time with that. So I've been very comfortable with my militant atheism, especially in a small town. And these work groups like the Des Moines group, and now growing into the eastern part of the state, really makes me a little vindicated on my thoughts on it.
Rich in Winterset, thank you for sharing. This brings up to a point, Phil, too, that you mentioned in your book, that in interviewing non-religious people, you found that they often were lacking in articulating their beliefs.
Exactly. I think that, unfortunately, is the default position. A lot of people who are no longer religious, there's almost this notion that you know, oh, if you're not religious, you're lacking something. And we know that's not true, but what we find is that religious people can much more easily articulate their values, their precepts, their doctrines, their creeds. You know, they can say to you, well, this is what I believe. I believe in these teachings, or I believe in these commandments, or I believe. And it's secular culture is not like that. Secular men and women tend to be free thinkers. They are much more interested in coming to their own conclusions about things. But what that means is they don't have a ready set doctrine or creed that they can, you know, bring forth when asked what it is. What does it mean to be secular? If you ask your average non-believer, well, what does it mean to be secular? They're going to fumble. But in my research, by asking those very questions, I've able to get a sense that there are key values and virtues you find in secular culture. They're just not readily articulated, but they are there. And you can find them, you can observe them, and they're complementary to those of the religious life. In fact, I see the values and virtues of secularism as good for America, just as religion does a lot of good as well.
Okay. Martha is with us in Riverside as we wind up our hour talking about the growth of secularism. Hi, Martha.
Hi. I wanted to mention the spiritual program of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober for 26 years, largely with the help of AA, and it's a spiritual program of recovery, not a religious program. And I'm absolutely certain I'd be dead if they had told me when I first went that I had to believe in a particular idea of God. And anyway, it's helped me tremendously. And I will say one thing. I'm real clear that I, in and of myself, am not God. Because for an alcoholic, that can be a very dangerous idea. It's like, oh, well, then I can probably figure out how to do this drinking thing without getting in trouble, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of believe that God flows through all living beings, you know. And but I'm real clear that I'm not the one, you know.
Okay. Martha,
anyway,
thank you.
And yep. Also, the congregating thing is that that's
that makes sense
me.
To you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, Martha. Thank you so much. Calling from Riverside, rushing things along a little bit. Sorry if you felt rushed, Martha.
No, that's okay.
We're coming to the end of our hour. Jim in Webster City, what would you like to chip in as we end the hour?
I just wanted to real quickly talk about how we regularly misuse the terms atheist and agnostic. We think of them as gradients on the linear scale of unbelief. Agnostic being you're halfway there, atheist being you're all the way there. But in fact, agnostic and atheist are answers to two very different questions. Agnostic is an answer to the question, what do you know? Atheist is the answer to the question, what do you believe? Mm. That means that every atheist is an agnostic, and every agnostic has to ask themselves, what do you believe?
Mm-hmm. Jim, very good. Let's get Phil to comment on what you just said. Does that match up with what you are putting out there, Phil?
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with that. I thought it was well said and well articulated. I mean, the issue is these are terms and concepts that mean different things to different people. There's no, you know, I can't look it up in a book and say that's what it means. So atheism and agnosticism mean different things to different folks, whether you're a philosopher, whether you're a linguist, whether you're just someone driving a tractor. So I appreciate what the caller said. I know others who might quibble and others who might agree.
Let's spend the last couple minutes of the program, have each of you sort of look out into the future and tell us where you'd like to see secularism in the United States in the coming years. Rory, with this billboard campaign, trying to change something in our society, what is the ideal you're trying to change for in terms of how we as a society view secularism?
Well, it really mirrors the LGBT movement of essentially coming out of the closet. And once people realize that they have family members, coworkers, neighbors, friends who are non-theists, attitudes will rapidly change, and certainly the internet has sped that process along. The billboards are nearing the end of their four-week run, and I would invite everyone to visit our website, centraliowacor.org or easterniowacor.org, and you'll find a welcome page and a tab for find a group, and the contact information for all of those 13 groups are to be found under that tab.
Phil Zuckerman, about a minute left for you to look into the future for us.
I think secularism's on the rise, and I think that's not something to be feared or worried about, but something to be celebrated. There's a lot of great aspects of secular life, and I hope to see them being more accepted in society and more understood and better understood.
Mm-hmm. You've done so many interviews. We didn't touch on that. Is there someone that stands out that you interviewed that is a nice little ending story?
Sure. Let's see. That's a good one. I'll refer back to the woman who was hit by a drunk driver and lost the use of most of her body. She was just such a glowing beacon of self-reliance and hope and optimism, and showing that many people do need belief in a God to get through tough times, but not all of us, and some of us do quite well without it.
Okay, very good. Phil Zuckerman, professor of sociology and secular studies at Pitzer College in Claremont, California. His latest book, Living the Secular Life, New Answers to Old Questions. Phil Zuckerman, thank you for joining us this hour.
My pleasure.
Rory Moll, thank you, coordinator of the Central and Eastern Iowa Coalition of Reason. We appreciate you coming.
Thank you very much.
And River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks for joining us.